Good afternoon.
And welcome, dear listeners, to a lovely temperature-induced Thursday, specifically coming from the capital where the clouds are playing hide-and-seek. Okay, the rain, not the clouds. The clouds are here. They're doing their part. I think it's probably these...
You know, one of the...
The incentivization that they probably need.
There are two reasons I respect this weather. They contribute to both to agriculture and our population.
1 minute, Helmut. We've now officially broken our own record. Last time it was 2 minutes into the show. Now it's literally the first minute.
Yeah, really?
Literally 1 minute. Yeah. But you know what? It is actually, I don't know if it's a proven fact, but if I can call it an urban myth.
I think that's one of those things that we are never actually going to prove, because the first question is, how do you investigate it?
Oh my goodness. No. I my mind already jumped there.
You can't investigate that without sounding like Diddy.
So it's
one of those things that will still remain, that will forever remain a mystery. Like, why is the sky blue? Why do we have five fingers? And, you know.
No, the sky blue is easy to explain.
Yeah.
But trying to, you know, prove a theory potentially by also being present in the same. No. Please, guys. Let's sanitize our minds.
That's creepy.
For now, some of you might still be on the road. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know. The pun hits very hard. I know. It's a truly impactful pun. But yeah, bring you back, welcoming you once again to the home run for this Thursday edition. Besides the record breaking, the record that we just set at the start of the show, primarily for ourselves.
Yeah.
We take a look primarily at a very interesting conversation, even though this is predominantly induced from an EU perspective, Helmut.
That's why I spend, it actually didn't take that long to find out, bits and pieces, almost saying something else.
I heard it. I know what you wanted to say. No. What you wanted to say is what you actually said. But what you almost said mm-hmm. is what I didn't want to hear.
I was going for tidbits.
No.
And then was stuck somewhere halfway through. But bits and pieces of information coming out of Africa, especially South Africa. And also we have, I think I shared one with you, one that's, where they talk about the same subject that's of electronic waste that we're going to be talking about today. This week, this is, there are actually two holidays that I did not know of until this year that happened this week. One is, International Failures Day. It's always celebrated. Turns out it's been celebrated for a while now. It's coming out of Finland. It's celebrated every 13th of October. And also the electronic waste. International e-waste day. It's on the 14th. International Failure Day is not to basically make a mockery out of, those that, planned to become doctors in high school and now they are doing, hey, good morning, good afternoon, welcome to my channel. Basically things did not work out halfway through. The fact that the holiday is coming from Finland basically points to some interesting, perspective to life that, this is basically a day that was put in place where we are supposed to reflect in all the things that we have failed and most importantly, the lessons we learned from those failures and how they have made us into better people. Not bitter. That one is more negative.
I mean, what's going on with you in English today?
I'm hungry. Better people than we are today.
Are we going to have these misfirings the whole show today?
Shots fired. Shots fired.
We're going to be like, we're going to be like those cars that, that don't know if they're coming or going. They're going like, ha, 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 ha.
I know. Yeah. So e-waste. We barely talk about that, right?
No, we don't.
Yeah.
No, we don't. It's actually because
it's very, look, it's very easy to know, you know, one way you can tell that someone is a mechanic is most likely their yard is going to look like a scrapyard. And I've seen a lot of those yards where someone is basically, well, I'm like, seriously? And you can see some of these cars have been here for at least a year or two. And if you, anyone that have visited some electronic shops knows that there are those ones that that's having a pile of laptops in the background. I'm like, you know, at the back. And now you're wondering, okay, what's going on here? It turns out, you know, it's about salvaging parts, I think, for the most part. Now, e-waste, when I first heard of the, you know, e-waste itself, I, you know, in my first way of looking at it, I looked at it narrowly from, electronic components, as in the, you know, as in as computers and cell phones.
Yeah.
Until I realized electronic components, we have electronized everything.
Yes.
Now there comes the problem.
That's actually one of the reasons why AI is so prevalent. But you are right.
Yeah.
That's where the problem comes in. The other thing is also, Helmut, from this e-waste report. Now, I was so disappointed because how I got to this report, so everyone just knows how we got to this particular report. The report's name, dear listeners, by the way, is it comes from a one of those particular sort of like extra. Okay, let me not say extra. One of those particular aspects, for example, that is like co-sponsored by multiple entities, but it comes through a UN channel. So if you're going to ask me right now, how do you get to these particular things? Well, you know, when you are one of those voorbarige journalists who put your email address everywhere at multiple places most of the time, the issue is somehow your email address just factors into this massive emailing database, and then you literally get spammed with a lot of interesting stuff that are most of the time interesting, and a lot of, like, stuff that are not so, you know, so thought-provoking because your country is already probably doing it. Your country has probably already had this particular conversation in the broader discourse of the nation, or, you know, that at least you know that one or two of your actual public public agents, I'll call them ministries or agencies or officers, are already implementing said particular strategy. And in many cases, it's probably one of the reasons why Namibia is in its own right a particular sort of like, I don't want to say golden child, because there's a lot of things technically that we have to sort out. Not to say they are wrong, but just sort them out.
Yeah.
But we're also not sort of like a shining beacon. We're a shining beacon on various aspects. For example, political stability, we're a shining beacon.
Mm-hmm.
On transition from one government to another, we're a shining beacon.
Hey, tourism, dude. Tourism.
On tourism, we are numero uno.
Yeah.
You can't beat us. Okay, maybe South Africa. But there are certain tourists we cannot absorb.
Yeah.
And secondly, we've, you know, our limited offering that we can give to the tourism sector. Mining, uranium mining. Hey man, we're a shining beacon.
Yeah.
Other resource mining, we can potentially reach those levels if, for some reason the politics in the broader discourse of Namibia needs to be, okay, let me not say the politics, but the politics influences it. Let me rather say just the discourse. The understanding in the discourse helps to lead the way in terms of understanding mining's position, and not to technically try and make as if mining can be this, the shining beacon sector that can solve all Namibia's issues. Because here's the first particular thing that anyone will ask you.
So like, it's a golden goose.
Yeah. Yes and no, Helmut. Yes and no. Why? Because what we've proven specifically, and this is the sector that feeds into this report sector, the e-waste sector, or this e-waste report, is primarily that the mining sector in Namibia feeds the e-waste report that we are, you and I are sitting here, that is generated from a European perspective. Let me say it again. And this is like I keep saying, it's such a wonderful thing sometimes to have siblings that have studied other fields of study that feed into the discussions that we sometimes have, and when you sometimes bounce ideas off. I don't know why we Africans, we are putting the mining sector on a pedestal. I don't know for what reason, but the pedestal seems to be only a pedestal of meeting the needs of a select few, meaning the owners and those associated to the mining sector. Helmut, you and I, we're not associated to the mining sector.
Nowhere near.
Nowhere near. There's no way that you and I can gain a beneficiation aspect, dimension, a thought, provoking a thought in that direction from said mineral. There's no way.
I think to get to get an understanding, or a little bit of understanding of why we, you know, why we prioritize that in terms of both attention and investment, or more like you know publicity.
Mm.
Why the extractive industry is dominant on the continent is just look at what caused the Dutch curse disease. Mm. It's because of its very, very, very extremely high return on investment. But the thing is, it only does that for a very, the employment rate or the employment quantity for the extractive sector is not a very big, one, because it's a very specialized, specialized skill type of, type of sector.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not anyone can just show up and start participating, at least not directly in the extractive industry.
Well, you can, but then you'll be a small scale miner, remember?
Oh dear. Oh, not that.
And if you're a small scale miner, what has been now the thing is that in many cases they don't renew their particular licensing.
Yeah, you see, the reason behind is a very simple one. It has a very high return on investment.
Exactly.
Like a very high return on investment, which sets a trap for a Dutch case disease, because that, you know, whatever you are extracting is finite. So that would be like, that would be putting all your eggs in one basket. So, when that resources runs out, you realize that narrowed the skills that you have produced over decades.
Mm.
But also you have abandoned, also that narrowing down of skills, that you have been producing have starved other sectors of any growth. Now you end up in a situation where you are now forced to more like diversify once that extractive finite resource runs out. You now have to diversify and, in other sectors. So you'll have to retrain and also a lot of people, and also, also rehabilitate the land.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we are, that's one thing that we are also terrible at. Which is why I think when you look at e-waste, for me, it's not very different from any type of pollution, be it plastic, be it, metals that are now filling, landfills, in scrapyards all across the, all across the globe, throwing, secondhand clothes on that one, especially in developing countries. And we're dealing with the same thing in space. We now have space junk, which is just another way.
And which is falling to the earth.
Yeah.
Burning up and falling on the earth, yeah.
Well, the good thing is we have the atmosphere, because most of the stuff, as soon as they enter the Earth's atmosphere, gravity pulls them at a very high speed. Most of them just burns and obliterate, in re-entry. And every time I think of that, I ask myself these meteors that you find in town square, like what size were those things before they just landed? Because for them to land at that size must have been massive. But anyway, e-waste is a very big problem, because the population, you're looking at 8 billion people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the majority of them, I think it's safe to say at this point, have one or two, let me just say more than one electronic. So think your cell phones, your laptops, your desktops, your computer, your washing machine, your microwave, and all these things have electronic components in them.
Yeah.
Your television, your remote, and now these days they're just putting electronic, now throwing your cars in that one, because they also have, the new ones have a lot of electronic components in them. All these electronic components, most of which are, ends up in a landfill. And now we have to talk about how to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Because it turns out most of them can be recycled, but the discussion of recycling is one that, it's not laid on a very solid foundation. If you look at, the early days of the recycling discussion, especially when we're talking about plastics, that have been, plastic recycling is one of the most highly criticized form of recycling.
Mm.
Why? It's because recycling is expensive.
Well, because also, Helmut. Okay, let's start at the bedrock of recycling, the recycling discussion. It's because China, with Donald Trump's first term presidency, went and said, I don't want American and European waste anymore. Actually, China did that specifically to Europe and to the UK. Now imagine, the UK has 60 million people on that small island.
Yeah.
60 million people that produce a lot of waste. A lot of waste. And I'm talking about all levels of waste.
Mm-hmm.
But the solid waste management discussion was the one, because there was a trade category in waste.
Huh?
Helmut, the Brits and the Europeans would sell their waste to China. China repurposes that waste.
Oh.
The same aspect in this report that you and I are sitting with.
Yeah.
Repurpose that waste and produce recycled products from recycled plastics, recycled electronics, and the likes. Obviously, there are variations of how recycling or repurposing looks like, in terms of, is it a product that can still be kept as is? You spruce it up a little bit. Remember when you told me about the iPhones?
Yeah,
the refurbishment of the iPhones and the smartphones that were stolen in Europe that would be sent to
the secondhand smartphone market.
Yeah, sent to Asia, repurposed, refurbished, cleaned. Because they would wipe the whole memory and everything, and then sell the thing back into the economies there. That's a trade itself. That's a trade mechanism itself. Now imagine doing that with waste, garbage. Doing that with waste. Now the waste gets put on container ships or tankers or cargo ships, and they get sent
shipped to Asia,
shipped to China specifically. And when China said before COVID, no, we don't want your waste anymore. We've got our own waste to deal with. Europe and the UK were now facing an issue, because here's the thing. There were literally businesses establishing themselves in just collecting this waste, putting it in a scrapyard, crushing it, boxing it, doing their thing, that so-called packaging, putting in it, because they would put if it was like crushed cars, they would put it would look like you can think of it like a zip tie around the thing, ne? But it's literally like a very strong cable to keep four crushed cars on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Gets put on a cargo ship or whatever and gets shipped. And then that scrap metal has to be repurposed, refurbished, recycled, recleaned or whatever. And it comes back to the UK economy. It's the same thing that led to ArcelorMittal's closure in South Africa a few months back. ArcelorMittal were complaining, we need more government subsidies. I sat there thinking, okay, so the CEO of ArcelorMittal is making this kind of noise. Why is he making this noise? And he was talking about the 100,000 jobs, the potential 100,000 jobs in a value chain that is associated to ArcelorMittal's smelting of iron ore and other metals. And then one of those South African media outlets goes and interviews the association CEO of Metalworks. And that guy stands up and says, but this company had enjoyed incentives from the South African government. But this company had a jump start in the South African economy, specifically in either facing subsidies in terms of the kinds of prices they could charge in the local automotive industry of South Africa, but it's also because the manufacturers and the other industries in South Africa preferred the recycled metal or the recycled metal sheeting and all those other products that were coming through from China and that was being conducted in South Africa. Because here's the thing, Helmut, there's a point where you realize to continuously iron or to mine out iron ore will become more and more expensive. To iron this thing continuously becomes a little bit of a challenge.
First you have to look for it.
Exactly. Then, scope it, pay for the whatever fees here to a government like Namibia in a developing world.
You know, moving machines.
And more, you've got to hire people, employ people. Whereas you can already see, but hey, there's a lot of iron, discarded iron lying around in junkyards and in landfills. So what do they do then? Which business plan is easier? For you to try and spend hundreds of millions of US dollars to establish a mine in Namibia, or is it cheaper to just spend a couple of million Namibian dollars to establish just a repurposing plant? You collect the necessary metals that you want, send it off to China, it comes back from there, you sell it into the Namibian economy as repurposed or refurbished or metal products, or yeah, metal products basically, into the Namibian economy. Which one would be easier? You definitely take the one that costs, that gives you the better competitive advantage in just in cost management.
Yeah.
In cost management. Because a mining facility, which many Africans, for some reason, are so fixated on. But it's not the African economies that are buying the metal.
No.
It's the European and American economies buying the metal and the Chinese economies. They are buying the metals. It's not the African economy. Now, remember when I said the statement a little bit earlier that I sometimes love the inputs that my siblings give me in terms of when I sometimes bounce an idea off of them. And I was continuously being told, Dwight, what is Africa's position in the world? It's the reason why we had the conversation also last year about what is the plan that other countries and people have for Africa? And what is our plan with them? Oh, there's one such conversation happening today and yesterday. It's based in Spain. It's based on the Spain-Africa 2025 to 2035 plan.
Isn't Spain part of the EU?
Yes. Isn't Italy part of the EU?
Isn't Italy part of the EU?
Isn't Portugal part of the EU? Isn't France? Is it Germany? Because all these other countries, Helmut, have a plan for us as Africans.
And nowhere. An EU, AU, Vision 2030 plan.
Yeah. Because it coincides with Africa's, this was a Vision 2030?
Yeah.
Inside the Vision 2063 for Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then where's Namibia's Vision 2030?
Oh dear Lord.
And where's the SDG? It seems like the SDGs seems to hit too close to home because it continuously, every time when I read an SDG report or I look at anything SDG related, I just keep thinking, this sounds like this thing was made for us Africans. Not for us Namibians, for us Africans. You know, so as to tell us Africans, guys, you've got a continental multilateral body. Strengthen the thing so that the thing speaks to everyone's needs. You don't have to subscribe to BRICS. You don't. You don't have to run around and trying to subscribe to even the Mattei plan from Italy.
Yep.
Okay, that would make things awkward. But you don't have to run. You just have to strengthen the AU. And that the AU replaces the UN officers in your country, because then the AU becomes that functionary agency that is party to the UN. Marnia, Helmut.
Right, we talked about this yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
On paper. We're good.
We are wonderful. We know the language.
Oh, no, the English language.
And then you get the beer kind of jokes.
This one. There's one Kenyan MP who shouted to his, his fellow parliamentarian and said, you just keep quiet while I dispense knowledge carelessly. Now, the thing is, the English language, or is it the French language for Francophone or French speaking countries? We are very good at this.
Mm.
And we are very good at making the plans, but executing the plans are two different things.
Mm.
I think, there's corruption everywhere. There's corruption everywhere. I'm actually one of those people that, thought corruption only takes place in developing countries. No, corruption is rife in developed countries. It's just being redefined. Now, that means corruption is not something, not to give everyone a free pass, but corruption is not something that you are going to completely get rid of. But the thing is, the way that it's being done in a more, in a very self-defeating way. Developed countries. There is corruption in developed countries, but they are getting something done. The thing is, when you have, guys that are basically stealing money from a hospital to buy Lamborghinis. I appreciate the guy's taste in cars, but, it's more like, we have investing more in our individual selves than we are in our collective selves.
Mm.
Because, that's why the AU's biggest problem is, I wouldn't say the AU's biggest problem. I would say exactly that. The AU's biggest problem is money. And the AU knows this. Africa is rich with natural resources. Africa is making a lot of money from these resources. How these resources are managed, that's the biggest problem. It's not that we don't have money. We have money. How it's being managed, that's the problem. Now, this is why every time that we talk about nuclear energy as a way of, as part of our energy mix, I always ask myself that question. How are we going to deal with the waste, nuclear waste? Because if you have the level of incompetences of managing a coal power plant, you can't do that with a nuclear power plant because you are going to end up with a Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you cut corners with a nuclear power plant, you end up with a mushroom cloud.
Yep.
So I'm just looking around and going, let's go with modular, please. Small modular until we are basically grown up enough financial wise to operate a large scale nuclear power plant. Maybe give it another 100 to 500 years. We're going to get there. So e-waste is a big problem. We all have, I don't know about you, but I have, I have my old phone is, the screen is all smashed up. I've been planning on replacing putting on a new screen since forever now. But since I have, three electronic devices already that are in use, that are functional, I'm like, okay, what's the point? Now, the thing is, even if I take my old phone and then refurbish it, take, for example, remove the old screen that doesn't work and then put in a new screen, what's going to happen to that old screen that's been removed?
Yeah.
It's none of my problem now. Well, it's none of my business now. It's the business of the guy that just replaced on the screen. What is he going to do? Send everything to the landfill.
But here's the thing, Helmut.
Yeah.
If you go and look at it in a Namibian context about e-waste discussions. Now, I also looked at, in preparation for our show today.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. We continue.
Yeah, where I left off. Yes. Don't worry, guys. Slightly enthusiastic for this particular point. So, in preparation, Helmut, obviously, if you look at, like, Windhoek's local authorities, where we are in Windhoek, or not Windhoek's local authorities, Namibia's local authorities, sorry, where we are in Windhoek, they cite, you know, just like a detailed, various detailed resources in terms of how you as an ordinary citizen or resident of the city, how you approach your own waste analysis discussion. Because it obviously means that you get designated either into the various categories of you're either a business, you're either a service provider, or you're either a household individual or a household category. So as a business, you've got variations of waste. As an organization, yeah, you could have similar waste needs like a business, but you could also be in a different sector where you're just generating other kinds of waste, not similar to like the private sector guys.
Yeah.
And then you've got household waste disposal, which obviously has also its unique perspectives, because it depends on whether it's solid waste or whether or not it's refuse is the solid waste, sewage removal for that matter, which is also a waste component.
Yeah.
So you have these three needs. They're broken up. You're obviously told if you consult those various resources, dear listeners, in terms of how you need to approach your own waste disposal plan as a resident, as a business, and as, let's say, a public service entity. The talking point that we are literally on is very niche, Helmut, because we are zoning in on just electronic waste, or technically waste associated to predominantly consumer durable goods. So we're talking about a car, we're talking about a fridge, we're talking about a TV, we're talking about a washing machine, and all those other kinds of things. Now, in Namibia, we are not on the level, obviously, of saying, you know, in every outlet, everywhere you go, every place, please split your glass from your plastic, from your metals, from your food waste when you dispose of it. Let's say you're in your household setting, please categorize them like that. We're not on that level as yet. We're just told, please take your plastics and your paper, separate it from your other waste as a household level.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put out two particular sort of like waste items outside of your property. This is your wheelie bin and that recycle bag, which we now all have to be filling since 2 years back. And that's the level that we find ourselves in. And obviously, the larger waste generators like businesses and public service entities, they obviously have their own requirements. You go to countries, let's use Europe. You go into Europe and into parts of Asia. You will be told how much you can't drive a car past 5 years. Your car must not be older than 5 years. That obviously means that they're trying to meet their climate obligations as a country, as a zone, and as a continent.
Uh-huh.
Right? You can ask the question. I saw you question was there.
How is that a climate
goal
solution?
Well, Helmut,
because isn't driving a durable car for an extended period of time going to, well, you don't have to buy a new, another one and then get rid of that one.
Exactly. The reasons being, Helmut, is that they wish to, it's, in all honesty, when you stand outside looking at this particular approach, it's a way in terms of how their governments obviously collaborated with the private sector, which are the car manufacturers, in terms of saying, hey, listen, guys, how can we look at the potential for you to not move business away from our economies, but also try to meet climate goals, environmental goals, XYZ, XYZ. And you can obviously see that this is a collaborative approach by saying, hey, listen, please put out various mechanisms in the public sector to tell motorists not to own a car past 5 years. And so that said motorists have to trade in that car for a newer addition or upgrade to a probably a better product offering. So that the newer technology can actually help meet your climate goals. Now, I'm summarizing that particular scenario because it is a total marketing and sales gimmick, but it is actually a very logical approach. But here's the thing, Helmut. Let's, for example, say your economics position as the individual in question changed drastically between when you bought the car and where you find yourself with the car now being 5 years old. In a scenario now where the car is literally your be all and end all because this is how you earn your living. And without this car, you don't have the capital or the money or the access to financing to buy a new car or upgrade the car. What do you do then? Now, in Europe, they start penalizing you. Meaning you start, you know, you actively get penalized for driving an old car. They would still allow you under certain circumstances, but I know because the UK still has a large and healthy second-hand car market. Mm-hmm. The same for South Africa as well. The same for the rest of Europe. But it's obvious a scenario in terms of, because the second-hand car market drives the parts and service industries across the world. And many people actually have a lot of love for the car or the version of their car or the edition of their car that it came out in. Mm. And obviously the car companies are trying to push new car sales. So you always find this sort of like resistance factor coming through from the market versus what the car company executives and the government officials, you know, you can call it collusion. Yes. They collude together to meet a specific governmental policy.
Like, this is counterintuitive.
No, it is. But here's the thing, Amut. It's a pushing mechanism. We were taught in marketing, you get pushing and pulling factors. Mm-hmm. A pulling factor is, for example, a factor where what the product does automatically pulls the customer. For example, when cell phones came out, it was a pulling mechanism. Mm-hmm. What did cell phones do? People realized I don't have to pay a Telkom Namibia anymore and a monthly account for having a telephone. Now I have a one-time large investment on the device. And then ultimately I just have very small compartmentalized subscription plans that I pay for. Mm. You could either at the start of telecommunications in Namibia, you could either, you remember when people went for the contract phones? You can either buy the contract phone, which gives you perks, or you can buy the device, which is your one-time investment, and for 2 years, all you've got to do is just pay $5, $10 here for airtime, and be able to text and call. Now, view it from that scenario, you get a pulling factor. It's a novel device, novel technology, it serves a purpose, it enhances a certain societal and business functions, and you just see productivity, you know, launch off. Second scenario, when it comes to the pushing element. Now, what do these mobile phone companies do now? They discontinue support every 2 years for the software on your phone, where they're literally telling you, Helmut, past this time frame, remember,
we're not going to offer any more
updates. We're not going to give you any updates. We're not going to give you any security updates. the updates to your applications will also run the cycle of life.
And a lot of these cell phone makers, especially the giant ones like Apple and Samsung, have been accused. They were both accused, I think, about 3 or 5 years ago of intentionally making old phones sluggish in order to push. I think to use your word, the term you just used, to push the people with old phones to basically discard those ones and get new ones.
It's a pushing factor. You are pushing them to the new technology.
That's not really helping with, that's not going to help a lot with, with this e-waste discussion. And it turns out, e-waste is your departure point. It really feeds into other types of waste, including pollutions. Pollutions, including water pollution.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these electronic components are made with heavy metal type of chemicals. Mm. So this is seeping into groundwater, and it's also polluting not just water, but also soil, which we need for sustainable agriculture.
Yeah.
So the problem is so big that it needs, it needs urgent attention. The thing is, we're approaching the problem. We want to solve it without it interrupting the profits. And that's not going to end well.
And that's obviously now where my statement of the usage of the word collusion steps in, because
collusion is the best way.
Because obviously a company shows up as a larger entity with a larger voice than the individual, meaning you and me, Helmut, on the ground. It shows up as a larger force versus the particular say that we have as an individual. Because if you came as a concerned consumer group or a concerned residential, association or something like that, obviously then, like I've now been hearing from civil society, obviously then the government starts taking note. Now, it's one of the reasons, obviously, why the civil society guys decided to move as a collective, come together as a collective, despite their various differences in terms of the projects and the interventions that they obviously champion. But so far, I've seen that particular mechanism work. I mean, we still have to utilize that particular discussion, Helmut, in one of our programs coming ahead. But for 4 years now, they've met with the Minister of Finance regarding what inputs they can contribute towards national budgeting. So it's not just up to the ministries making up something or relying on their extension officers and local authorities and regional authorities about what are the actual things on the ground there for you. Now, the civil society guys have that. But here's the thing. Why is it just the civil society guys that have an insight into that particular discussion, into just budgeting? Why can't we as consumers and citizens and concerned communities also approach the other ministries and say, hey, listen, why don't you reach out for town council or what they call it, town hall engagements?
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing, Helmut, to give your concerns to an opposition MP that you voted for in the parliament will really not bring change. I tell you today, it won't bring change. I've seen now for the past 5 years, this experiment not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And this is from an experiment. This is based upon elections from 2019 and 2020. The only particular experiment or the only particular initiative that has been championed, and I'm sorry for mentioning this, but it's not about promoting them, has specifically been the genocide court cases that the LPM has championed. So far, anyone else? Okay, there was also AR with the red line discussion.
Yeah.
But obviously, okay, both of them actually fizzled out in terms of, the impetus, but the LPM guys launched another particular court case in terms of the genocide discussion. But you actually see in different dimensions, the discussion, the needs of something that concerns demographics in the country being taken directly to an actual platform that can actually bring change, a courtroom. If you now give it to an MP an opposition MP, you're concerned, Samut, from, let's say from Divundu or from Rehoboth or Groot Oak. It just ends there. The minister shows up with a statement saying, yes, we recognize. And then what? And then you see the media guys running around writing a statement just on that engagement that was answered there. But the people on the ground don't see change.
You know, when it comes to solving these problems, one of which is this e-waste, for example, or basically any type of pollution. And this year, when you were in the field, the plastic pollution discussion that what was postponed from the previous year, and they convened on the same discussion in South Korea, and it also ended without reaching any type of solution as to what we're going to do with all the plastic pollution that we are accumulating on a very large scale.
Yeah.
Especially, the ocean current is now sweeping, making literal islands out of it.
It has been. Since 1930s.
Jeez.
There is plastic pollution, Helmut, so old on the sea, in the ocean currents.
Yeah.
It's like from old Second World War battleships, cruisers, fishing boats, stuff like that. And it's not even the trash that is on the seabed.
Mm.
Like from sunken ships and all that.
This is the floating one.
These are just the floating things. And remember, plastic comes from the 1800s?
Yeah.
Plastic is also a pretty old technology.
It's non-biodegradable, yeah. So it's just going to be chilling there for...
It's just been floating there. Now, there is this initiative that I follow on my personal socials, the International Water Association or International Water Council, IWC.
Yeah.
Namibia is not part of it, primarily because it's run like an NGO organization. It also attended this World Water Conference.
Yeah.
The UN Water Conference that you and I spoke about that was held in France earlier this year. Those guys have been renting... what's the thing's name? These fishing boats, trawlers, fishing trawlers.
Yeah.
But like you would try to fish for fish, it's these trawlers are literally fishing out these plastic islands. So they've been doing that. But you should see some of the statistics.
Okay.
You should see some of the statistics that they've highlighted in terms of the amount of trash that they've been taking out of the sea for the past 2 years, Helmut.
Yeah.
Literally, this began in 2022. They say some of the trash can literally fill up the whole of Comas. That's how much trash they keep taking out of the sea.
Okay, now, the thing is, we are trying to dry the house that we're, what we're doing here, like that approach.
Yeah.
Is like trying to, mop a house dry when you have all the faucets open.
Yeah.
Because, plastics are still being produced. Consumers are still using this product. So that means we are discarding tons globally on a daily basis. So that means, we have not closed the tap. We just want to, mop it clean. Now, I know that, there are a lot of bureaucracy and regulations and more like international agreements that must be reached to pull that off. Mm. The thing is to solve that problem, I think the biggest problem is trying to balance it with, trying to do it without impacting profit.
Mm.
That's not going to be easy.
No, it's not.
The reason why profits are a priority is easy. Shareholder, you can say whatever you want to say on that, but I know that if I was a shareholder, I don't want my dividends going down.
No.
I would not want that. Now, you just want it going up. Now, for them to pull that off, they have to, basically be doing a lot of things that most of which will be negatively impacting the planet. Now, if you want to know how, one of my favorite story took place in Czech Republic in 2001 when Philip Morris with one of their brands, I think that was Marlboro, approached the Czechs, the Czechs Ministry of Health and told them, they wanted to expand their market in Czech Republic.
Mm.
Now, The government of the Czech Republic, I think, the government of Czech Republic asked them to, you know, to produce a report that will basically show how that will contribute positively to their economy. Because for the Ministry of Health, that's a big deal. Because, you know, the more people, the more people are smoking, the more health issues they're going to have. And at the end of the, in a long run, it's going to impact their, it's going to impact their workforce. Well, Philip Morris basically gathered up a bunch of quote unquote experts to compile a report those researchers were very honest. They used the 1998-99 Ministry of Health statistics of Czech Republic and published a very interesting, gave the minister a very, it was somewhat confidential, given to the Minister of Health. And then, well, someone snuck in there, maybe just, leaked it to the media.
Mm.
Oh, no. Philip Morris had to apologize. Because one of the things that was pointed out in the report was that, well, look on the bright side. The more people are going to smoke, the more they're going to die. So you don't have to worry about, spending a lot of money on retirement funds. And everyone was like, huh? But wait, what? So, long story short, they had to come out and basically apologize. But, the minister himself were basically roped into that whole fiasco of the highest order. Now, the thing is, that basically just goes to show you how investors care about their money.
Mm.
Well, you and I love the money that we do to the point where there was a very nice failed transporter series that happened in Rocky Crest. Was that yesterday? Someone decided to do transporter to try and get away from golf with a Nissan Note. Really? That's like me trying to outrun Frankie. How do you think that's going to work out? The thing is, if you like money, so...
Guys, I'm really trying.
I know. Look, I'll give you credit for that one. Someone thought they could, outrun a golf with a Nissan Note.
Yeah.
Which is very embarrassing because they were all guys. And guys, we are known to have a lot of knowledge about cars.
Mm.
Clearly, those guys didn't get the memo. Now, here's the thing. Shareholder profit is impacting a lot of a lot of problems that we want to solve. Last week years old when I found out that, the world ocean is basically littered with oil rigs that are labeled as, most of which are labeled as, under rehabilitation, but the reality is they are abandoned because they are very costly to demolish once that finite resources have been extracted.
Yeah. It's not like it's extracted already. It's just that the tap was closed.
Yeah.
The oil rig, think of the oil rig like a
floating house.
No, like a floating straw, which has a tap.
Turns open. It's basically a straw. A very expensive one.
A very expensive straw. So think of it as a straw that has a tap at the top.
Yeah.
But Amut, you're also going a little bit far because remember you're now an extractive sector and primarily where the e-waste usually is a discussion of this is still the waste that we see that is controlled on land.
Yeah.
Because when I started from that China saying, no, we don't want Europe and the UK's waste anymore. It ultimately shows you the concern that hence this report is technically based from a European perspective. And since Africa and Namibia's mining sector is, linked to the global metals exchanges and minerals exchanges that are based where? In Europe and in North America. The unfortunate thing is that obviously we can also see a ticking time bomb in terms of when mining would no longer work. And when I say unless someone starts building, spaceships for flying to Mars and stuff like that, it seems like mining itself is a ticking time bomb or ticking clock on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been excavating so much of these minerals. These minerals are now lying around there in Europe. They're lying around here in our countries. So what is stopping someone from just saying, okay, let's just keep continuously repurpose and refurbish and recycle and reuse all these minerals? Because they lay out a four-point strategy in this report. It's a strategy, Helmut, that speaks of the four scenarios. Current situation, you still have the whole supply chain from the mine shaft to the consumer, still intact. Second scenario is based upon recycling. Recycling and then working on a scenario in terms of how do you recycle successfully the existing deposits of this waste around you with these minerals in it. How do you recycle them? And repurposing, which is the refurbishment discussion, you know, just wiping it off on both sides, you know, making sure that it still functions, send it back out, you know? And then there's the other situation in terms of how do you achieve your green strategy from this particular, from a specific targeted intervention on these particular minerals. It's already on the minds for the Europeans that side to say, hey, listen, how about we start looking at the way we actually use these minerals? Because Helmut, they know that they've got to compete with China predominantly. They know that they've got to compete with other particular service providers. And I just quickly want to read those. Oh, no, it's three, not four. Three scenarios. They call it three scenarios. So it says that the project analyzed trends from 2010 to 2050 across EU, Iceland, Norway, Switzerland, and the UK under three future scenarios. The business as usual, the recovery, and the circulatory. So the recovery is that, you know, wipe it off on both sides and send it back. Yeah, and circulatory is about you recycle and continuously reuse the thing and you keep it like in a they call it now the circular economy discussions that have popped up, you know, this label. So if you look at the business as usual, assumes current trends still continue. The recovery scenario focuses on improved collection and consumption. No, on improved collection and recovery systems. And the recovery systems. And then also it aims to maintain current levels of consumption and waste generation. And then the circulatory scenario envisions a shift towards longer lasting repairable products and reduced waste generation. Now, if you had to look at each one of those scenarios, Helmut, in a discussion of the e-waste and waste generation, how much we as humans generate around us, because according to this report, apparently in Europe, in Europe, every person generates at least 20 kilograms of waste. Yeah, on average. Households and businesses across the Euro 27 plus 4 country zone generates 10.7 metric tons of waste. And on average, that means it's 20 kilograms per person. So 20 kilograms, dear listeners, doesn't look like much. But imagine two 10 kilogram bags of your favorite maize meal brand that you're standing with in both hands.
Apenas una mitad, vengimos ondando da ShopRite. O se vengimos con huigra, ondando de ripepi, ni pumbio, hay gente o pum. Gacho, mi namozo, lo visa, jade, quiero aje, diri mo, miro guane, o miro guane, nambarina, o miro guane, nane. Mo, maru, diga yo roca, que cero, miro guane, dato no huay, no senda, o miro guane, no huay. O se, ojra, mo, me acerga, tano, zombo, tayo, romi, yo, maga, diga, ripepi, kodorom, no guane, no senda, o miro guane, no huay. O se, que uno, futa, o shinji, si vole, po, ShopRite price. Diri, go, se, con logo, no huay, na, jotoba, no huvo. O co, ShopRite, a coque, endera, opa, mino, ready, steady, cook, Juan Africa. No ma, panduro, co, ShopRite, Namibia.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
e-waste.
So, 20 kilograms doesn't look like much when we mention it, but just imagine with your, you know, your favorite maize meal brand, 10 kilogram bags, you know, you're standing with one each. But, and that's just e-waste, guys. That's not the other waste that you also produce. When we get, Helmut, also to the notion of understanding where does Namibia find itself? So last year, a report came out from the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, the UN's oldest agency. And Namibia was weighted in that report. Here's the funny thing, Helmut. The NSA participated in that report. Yeah, remember I sent it, you know, just before the show. I sent it to you. The NSA participated in that report. And the other funny scenario is, this is not a conversation that we are seeing or hearing in the broader concepts of how does Namibia look at a potential sector that is untapped, unsourced for. Because when we think about recycling, we're just going, okay, fine, it's plastic. There's glass recycling. There's fabric and textile recycling, meaning like clothes. I mean, there's a 2 billion euro business known as Patagonia. The guys that make adventure clothing, you know, for you to go hiking and stuff. Yeah. Patagonia, it's a French company. This guy made this company, Ahmed. He didn't have any textile background. He made this clothing company in the 80s because he was a mountaineer. A mountaineer, these people that love climbing mountains. For some reason, in Europe.
I know.
But in Europe, you know, they don't almost have the wild elements we have. You know, that can come and tell you, hey, brah, how's it? How's that? How are you hanging? You know what? I've been watching you since all the way down there. And to me, you look like the best piece of steak on this planet.
Nothing personal.
Nothing personal. But I just
a food chain.
I just love the juicy calves that you've got on you. Mm. You know, and that sweet human aroma that you're giving off. Just don't make it weird, you know, by giving off other aromas. We don't want that. We don't want you being nervous. But you know what? Could you become my lunch for tonight? No, lunch is not. Could you become my dinner for tonight? You know, I've got this lovely leopard lady who would love some human steak. So yes,
this leopard lady I want to impress. So,
yeah. So yes, we've got the
dramas like screaming and kicking.
Yeah, please don't do that. Hey? You know what? I can see my future cubs with her. So I don't want you making things awkward for us. So how about that?
How did we get here?
From Patagonia.
I know.
So the Patagonia brand itself, the company itself, Helmut.
Yeah.
This man decided to take a environmental perspective, environmentally safe perspective, because I read the whole interview based upon this. Actually, we did this 2 years back, this discussion about Patagonia, you know, these recycled clothing and stuff like that. I don't know if you remember.
I'm not sure I do.
Because we spoke about, because I'm now sitting here remembering, oh, wow, we actually had this call, but I think it might have been on the business economic segment.
Maybe, a little bit later, yeah.
So, all fibers used in his clothing are recycled fibers. Recycled nylon, which is plastic fibers, recycled cotton fibers, all manner of fibers are recycled. They were other clothing somewhere. And it was repurposed into the brand that he's got. Ahmed, to you and me, that sounds like a wonderful idea. How did he pull this off? This company is worth 2 billion euros. 2 billion euros. And you know how that guy lives? The owner of the company?
Mm-hmm.
He technically resigned from his post 2 years back in 2020. He technically resigned.
2 billion, running a $2 billion empire?
He technically didn't run it also. When I say technically,
mm-hmm.
It was a scenario of just creating a product with an environmental purpose, with an environmentally safe or healthy purpose or viewpoint, but it still gave quality products. This obviously means in that scenario that this is an opportunity for many Namibians also to view. Because here's the concern, Helmut. Obviously, once again, bouncing ideas from my siblings. They continuously tell me, Namibia has in itself, we've got the ideas in itself. But the ideas should not be ideas of saying, you know what? We've got this wonderful idea that can create jobs.
Now,
why are we starting like that?
Two things. One, the biggest, one of the biggest hurdle about trying to control e-waste is the speed with which technology is advancing.
Yep.
Because you can't use the same electronic equipment for more than 5 years. Take, for example, 10 years ago and get your smartphone from that time, you'll realize that most of the apps that you have on your smartphone today, they can't run on that device because they're too big.
Or the device's software, or the device's hardware
the
cannot.
The device's hardware cannot handle the software because it's too heavy. And now when you look at it from that, you realize, you see problem number one, that there's e-waste discussion when it comes to managing it. That's problem number one. That basically means every time.
Just read that tagline.
Trade in, get credit.
You give your clothes back to them.
Jeez. It's like how a lot of, there's one cell phone shop, if I can call it that, in town that I know, that do more like they do trade-ins. You can give them old phones and then pick which phone you want, and then you can just top up if the price is high for you to get a new one. And of course, what they do is the old one that you're going to give them, they're going to fix everything that's broken with it, if there's anything broken, and then put it on the put it back on the market again. I think those guys are up to something. But the software and the hardware must run parallel to each other in terms of development, in terms of advancement, in terms of in terms of how efficient they are. Mm. Which is why we have phones that are now like 5,000 milliamps.
Yeah.
That's to keep up with the amount of processing power you have on your smartphone.
And I mean, Helmut, which consumer goes out and tries to understand which battery power phone gives them the best bang for their buck? The thing that the consumer looks at is the buck. How much does the thing cost?
Yep.
Does it fit my purposes? Does it have the apps I want? And can I add on more things without it actually start freezing up in my face? That is what a consumer looks like.
Before we started, I told you about my, my homeboy and I playing, video games online, and he's gaming in the fridge.
Yeah.
Because his phone is constantly overheating.
Yeah.
Now, if you just look at gaming devices, be it desktop, laptops, or smartphones, they come with massive specs, 12, 16 gig RAM. Mm. That's on a smartphone. Now, and you have a giant battery because, games demand a lot of specs of, for them to run, efficiently. And no one likes lagging. Like, Paul, that phone is going to end up in a wall. Now, that's,
I think that person will think 100 times someone before throwing their phone
in a wall.
Unless you can buy a phone just like that after throwing it against the wall.
Now, there's something I came across on this subject of e-waste here in Namibia, which I have to admit I didn't know. I don't know if you did. Turns out, Karen have been, putting out a lot of, I know they are listening, They are always listening. They're always putting up more like awareness, education with regards to with regards to e-waste.
Mm.
I'm like, really? This has been going on here? I did not know that. No, because on their website they point out that as Namibia embraces the digital age, the proliferation of electronic devices has become a double-edged sword. While technology offers unprecedented opportunities for connectivity and innovation, it also generates a growing problem, electronic waste, aka e-waste. Mm. E-waste refers to a discarded electrical and electronic devices that are no longer in use or have reached the end of their life cycle. Now, then they go on a lot of things, and on about a lot of things. But there's one thing that I just want to point out is that, additionally, basically back to their article. Additionally, by understanding that e-waste management requires a collective effort, Karen has collaborated with the ministry. With the Ministry of Environment and Tourism, and Forestry, and City of Windhoek's Waste Management Unit to enhance the rich and effective e-waste awareness campaigns. I'm like, huh?
But you see where it is. It's just a campaign. Do you see where the concern comes from?
Uh-huh.
Just like I also explained a little bit earlier in the show, the discussion, if you go and look at, you know, what is there in terms of, let's for example say where we are, which is in Windhoek, you know, what is City of Windhoek's particular approach to e-waste?
Mm-hmm.
And then City of Windhoek has got this solid waste, how you approach your solid waste needs, what kind of a customer you are. Are you a household? Are you business? Are you public sector?
Yeah.
And then how do you factor in terms of what you produce as waste? Then you sit there thinking and scratching your head. When I read that statement, because you know, I also found that grand statement from, is it from 2 years back? 2023 or 2024?
Yeah, it must be from, hang on a second, it's from, this is of January this year.
This year, yeah, January this year. When you go and sit and think about the discussion, it's just a statement. It's not a report. It's not what we have done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a statement. But here's the thing also. The City of Windhoek currently, Hamoud, just last week conducted the mayoral cleanup campaign as well to sensitize, let me use marketing terminology, sensitize communities to clean up their neighborhoods, to clean up riverbeds, to clean up, you know, bushy areas in their proximities.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense because the e-waste also feeds into water pollution, because when all these heavy metals that's used in the production of these electronic components, when it rains, they're washed away into catchment areas and they seep in the ground.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. Here's the thing. Do you see the hard sell? So hard selling is I have to convince you,
mm-hmm.
Nah. As to why you've got to do a certain action. Why should you do the action that I'm trying to convince you of doing? Now, in Namibia, I see this a lot with what local authorities have to go through, what SOEs have to go through, what ministries have to go through. Why is it so difficult for the average person to know there's a dustbin?
Sometimes you have to raise a Windhoek beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Windhoek beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Windhoek, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back, but before we continue, let's take a live read.
Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2-liter, 1.25-liter, or 600ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142*45845 # punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Davidson University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education. Programs on offer are Diploma in Legal Studies for Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. How to apply? Applications can be done online on our website at www.wu.edu.na. The application fee for all courses is $230 Namibian. The payments can be done at the bank, EFT, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form along with all other relevant documents. And no ATM deposit receipts as a proof of payment will be accepted. All foreign qualifications must be accompanied by an NQA evaluation report or certificate. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
Yeah, the fact that you have to be told to clean.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, that is a hard sell. What city of Windhoek had to engage in?
Yeah.
In the mayoral cleanup campaign. Is a hard sell, Helmut. It's a hard sell in Rehoboth, in Okahanya, in Gobabis, all the major towns in Namibia.
Yeah.
How many mayors have done this in Namibia's 35-year history, where they've tried to initiate a social, a program or initiative for social good or community good, and then the participation rate is a paltry, almost like 5 or 10 people participating, concerned citizens and residents. The thing here is, Helmut, we are light years away of understanding the amount of waste in Namibia that each person creates and generates. We are light years away. It's the same thing that I saw specifically back in 2011, end of 2010, there in Harare in Zimbabwe. They had this massive campaign there in Harare about keep your city clean. But the first thing I saw and noticed was that they did not have public dustbins.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the campaign is already...
Some cities in Japan known for that?
But here's the thing. It's ingrained in Japanese culture, Hamut.
Yeah.
That's why you don't find cleaners at Japanese schools. It's the responsibility of the learners of the school to keep the school clean. Do you know what they do? That these English teachers that they hire from English-speaking countries, which is a culture shock to them, they said, but we had, like the American teachers would say, but we had janitors. A janitor is obviously...
these school cleaners.
Yeah. And we also sit with that idea here in Namibia.
As soon as you use something, just discard it. Someone else whose job it is to pick it up.
Exactly. Do you know what they do in Japan? After school, school ends, let's say at 1:15.
Yeah.
Your child stays after school, helping to keep the school clean because it was your child using the school.
So it's from childhood.
Yeah, it's an ingrained thing. You're not supposed to pay for people to come and clean your school. Which actually speaks to a dehumanizing aspect in terms of this particular position, this particular job that was created in society. Not that you just save money, but here's the thing. The children go and water the plants. The children keep the windows clean. They keep the classrooms clean. There's a schedule that works. And your class cleans your class. Not your class cleans the whole school class.
Mm.
Your class cleans the class. And they are taught from primary through to high school. There is no such thing as a cleaner. There is no such thing as a cleaning job. There are trash can collectors, bin collectors, the same guys that you see here in the suburbs, that come with a truck, take the bins, those guys are still there. But not cleaners in you'll probably find cleaners in the big companies and big establishments.
Yeah.
But it's not on a school level.
Look, it's not rocket science. Take for example, if you are somewhere in a town square sitting and basically munching on something, after the package that whatever it is that you are eating, you have eaten everything out of it. The first instinct that comes in a lot of our minds is just, you know, just toss it somewhere. You know, the, you know, City of Windhoek is a responsibility of City of Windhoek.
Which is a wrong thing.
Yeah, like it's a very, not just a wrong, it's a very amateur one.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're basically messing up.
Yeah.
Like you want someone else to come and clean up after you, a fully grown human being. Like that's, I mean, it's a very dumb approach to handle, you know, I mean, it's a very dumb approach. So now the thing is, we have public dustbins.
Mm.
We have public dustbins. You don't have to shove everything in a bag and then put it in your bag to go and throw it away in your own trash can at home.
Mm.
You have public dustbin. All you just have to do is stand up and then walk to the trash can and toss it there.
Mm.
We don't do that.
We don't. Just yesterday, I saw a student, a girl, at one of the local universities. I won't mention names.
Thank you.
But I finished the event, you know, finished covering the event, and I got in my car, and as I'm now driving to the gate, these three girls are walking from the front. These three ladies, not girls, because girls are, you know. Yeah, so let me correct myself. These three ladies who are students at this institute. And then one of them, you know, those ices that people buy in the community?
Oh, yeah.
Those flavored ices, those icicles.
Yeah.
She finished one.
The one on the stick?
No, the one in the plastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Finished one, and she just did this, you know, flung the plastic to the side on the ground there, right there. 10 meters behind her is literally like three dustbins at the gate. 10 meters behind her. It's not even 100 meters, a kilometer away. No. 10 meters behind her.
She could have just played net.
Three dustbins are standing right there, open. They don't even have lids anymore. They're like gaping, telling the world, please fill me up with trash. No, Helmut. Just keep your mind out of the gutter, Helmut. Even though we are proverbially or literally in a gutter, in a gutter sense, talking about trash and waste.
Oh no, I was still busy thinking about trash until you pointed that out. Now I'm off to correct them. No.
Yeah. But on a simple thing like that, throwing a plastic bag away is already an issue on an individual micro level in Namibia.
Yeah.
Now, how do you think we then approach e-waste? If we're writing which a statement that looks like a blog post from CRAN, and the campaign has to be implemented through another agency. I know that City of Windhoek is obviously the primary agency to deal with waste on the ground, right? But here's the thing, Ahmed. Here's the thing, literally. Do you know what we don't have driving that initiative? Yeah. We don't have a private sector telling the public sector, just like this report from the EU, which technically coming through a UN perspective, is telling how the private sector in the EU and the public sector in the EU are working together to solve an issue. We don't have this collaboration. We don't have, Ahmed. It's also primarily one of the reasons that when I sit here looking at all the developments and press conferences and events that have happened in Namibia, and everywhere I just see, it's a minister standing up. It's a minister standing up. But I can clearly see this is a two-pronged approach. It should be a public sector, private sector approach. But it's every time a minister getting up. It's every time a minister. I'm like, wat gaan hier aan? What's going on here?
I have one or two more sentences for you.
Yeah.
From the regulatory authority guys.
Yeah.
To further improve waste awareness in Namibia, several strategies can be improved, can be employed.
Mm.
Integrating a waste education into tertiary curriculum. Okay.
So now I'm paying a university to go and learn about garbage. Hi, Amu. Does that not sound like you throwing potentially money down a toilet?
No, the reason behind is, this will foster understanding among students about the, you know, about its environmental impact.
At university level?
You know what? I'll go with the Japanese on this one. Introduce it at kindergarten.
Helmut.
I would argue introduce it at kindergarten, university. Okay, that's going to be tricky.
I mean, the level of thinking to get to that level of saying, let's just work with the universities is astounding. Do you know what, Helmut?
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, it doesn't cost anything to pick up a phone, call one of the business owners, or one of the general managers, or one of the CEOs of all these companies,
yeah,
and ask them, do you guys form part of any associations in the Namibian economy? Do you have an industry association?
Yeah.
Do you know how much it took me just a Google search to find that there was an association for renewable energy, for the renewable energy sector? It just took me a Google search. Do you know that there's an association for private doctors in this country? Private doctors and dentists. It doesn't cost anything except just your fingers, a little bit of brain power to literally go and say associations or entities that represent sectors in Namibia. Doesn't cost. So how could they approach a discussion from that perspective of saying, let's put it at the university level? Now, what about your kid? Are you teaching your kid at home, who's in grade one, how to clean up after themselves? Are we doing that?
I think that's the part where human rights are beginning to kick us big time.
What do you mean, Namo?
One of the things we have to define is, I think one of the biggest conversation we must have is, child labor.
At home.
Yeah.
Helmut, at home.
Uh-huh. In Africa.
Your living space.
Uh-huh. In Africa. Now, I don't know how we're going to handle all the dust allergies because, I went to school where we took turns cleaning the class.
Yeah. And on all the schools I've been is that.
Yeah. We took turns cleaning the class. Of course, the toilets and everything, more like basically the schoolyard, their work is dedicated to that. But, now that you brought up that whole, Japanese example, it just brought to my mind why a lot of public facilities, especially the ablution facilities, why most of them are in disarray. Because I feel like we don't have that sense of responsibility of knowing that, this is not free. It's paid for by taxpayers.
Mm.
It's not free. My uncle, my niece, if I'm employing myself, I'm paying for this, so I have to take care of this. But we have this mentality of, it's just for the government. Just use it however you want.
Mm.
And now we have cares on our hands. But
when life gifts you an unexpected expense.
How must I afford a new phone now?
Take control with Express Credit. Get reliable relief when you need it most. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars. Repayable over 2 to 5 months. Apply for a quick cash loan. Easy application. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or call 90,000.
Africa. South Africa.
South Africa. Now, it's a sense of responsibility that, like you just pointed out, engraved from a very early age. But also, it really questions it brings into question the whole adulthood thing. I'm an adult, I can do whatever I want. Because if you are an adult and you really are matured enough to do whatever you want, shouldn't you know that when you use a piece of plastic, for example, you shouldn't just toss it out through the window? But, well, we all are guilty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But before we basically wrap everything up, un momento, si vous plaît. Just one small break. My favorite break.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Now, Just to wrap it up, the whole electronic waste discussion is one that for me is speaks into our, first of all, it has a lot of positivity to it, not the waste, but where the waste is coming from. We have technological advancement have basically made our lives very easy because you can listen to yours truly and, to your favorite duo, here in the studio thanks to that technology. Now, the thing is, like everything basically comes with pros and cons. Technology is coming with a lot of electronic components that's making the transport system, communication system, or basically entertainment and everything around us. Everything has been, simplified. Now I don't have to, I don't have to write a letter and then send it home where it will take, just a couple of days or maybe a week for it to arrive. Now I can just, if I want to talk to my people at home, I can just call them. Yeah. And, I think that was very dangerous. Yeah. Writing a letter and then giving it to someone and then crossing your fingers and hoping they don't read it.
Which in some cases they did.
Naturally. Yeah, they just, write a whole different letter. You wrote one about how much how much your loved one is dear to your heart and how much you are thinking about them every night and you can't wait to go and see them.
And then they go share it with the other guys in the community telling them, look at what this Dwight wrote here in his love letter.
Oh, no, that's not the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario, some homeboy edits everything to, I found someone else here, just get married there. That's just diabolical. But
we should stop with our imagination somewhere. Some people are writing notes going like, yeah, maybe I should do that next
time. I should try this. So technology has made our life easy, but then that technology also have to understand a battery is made out of lithium and you have a lot of chemicals that your electronic components are made out of, and most of them are known to contain heavy metal, which seeps into our agricultural land and our drinking, or more like water that's used in irrigation. And one way or another, these chemicals finds themselves in our bodies. And then all of a sudden, at some point, the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology and Cranes problem becomes a Ministry of Health problem and Ministry of Environment problem and Ministry of Agriculture problem and becomes David's problem.
And we are being chased out problem.
Yeah. And until tomorrow, same time, same place, you're on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all have a blessed one. And please do stay tuned for Business and Economic segment. What is good afternoon? My name is Happy Juju doing here.
Yeah, let's ask that question. But on that note, dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place.
All right.